You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Xanthe Burdette. Xanthe, thanks so much for being with me today.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
So I'm looking forward to talking about your show, of course, Psycho Pomp, which was at Palo Gallery, and, you know, that recently closed. And there's a number of ways we can get into this show and this work, but to talk about part of the content first, the work that you're painting emerges from a kind of set of mythologies that you keep working with. Is that correct?
Yeah, it is. I think I'm really interested in the architecture of myth and the way we use myth, maybe more than I am in like certain myths that we tell.
And, you know, myths is such a thing of kind of, like there's Jungian myths and all these different types of myths that I imagine we'll be talking about a little bit. But does it also come from a personal experience with myth or afterlife, if that's not too personal a question to jump in with? Is there a kind of otherworldly experience you've had that kind of set you on this path, early memory or whenever?
Yeah, it's interesting. I grew up in South Devon, which is the south of England, and it's very rural and very kind of overgrown and forested, and it's an area of temperate rainforest, so it's kind of dripping with lichens. And I also grew up in a community with a really strong oral storytelling tradition, so I grew up around all these kind of oral tellings of myth and also a lot of experiences in the landscape that were I guess they were very worldly. I was going to say otherworldly, but that's not how I feel about them. But that in the landscape, I think I was able to transport myself into other imaginings of time and kind of possibility.
And how does that take shape? I mean, it makes me think immediately of kind of fairies and gnomes, but that's another world, right? Or is it? Are they about... if it's okay to explore this more, is that about a dialogue with the kind of world as an entity that speaks?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, I mean, as a child even, actually, I wasn't really interested in fairies and gnomes. I was quite sort of strange and serious, and I think I was more interested in a dialogue with the past and a feeling that in these places, the past felt really quite close to the surface and... Mm-hmm. It's just like it kind of hovered all around you, and I was kind of interested in humans before me and creatures before me and going quite far back, and a sense of like living in those histories. Yeah.
And so as a young person or a young girl or whatever, how did that impact your life? That was a kind of a pastime or something? I mean, that sounds like a very unusual environment you were brought up in, having that kind of access to the natural world. That was part of an education, would you say?
Yeah, I think I was quite isolated growing up. It was a very rural community, and I went to a very small school, and so in that kind of, you know, we lived away from the town, just on like a kind of house on the hill, and I would just disappear into nature. And I think in part of that, like, isolation, and perhaps, I have siblings, but they were much older, and I would sort of find this way into playing that was the natural world, and this, like, spirit of play and story creation that was very involved, and not lonely, but I was doing it by myself.
Yeah, it's really so, so interesting. But the doing it by yourself, though, is why it's also... I mean, maybe this is an adult way of putting it, but a little bit of a divine dialogue, right? You're talking with the world, or...
Yeah, and I am very interested. I think a lot of my kind of reading now is I'm looking a lot at post-humanism, but not in a sort of the way our bodies might become slowly entwined with technology, but more in the way that perhaps the boundaries between our bodies and the natural world and our environment are less sort of discrete than, you're led to believe as a young person, that there's this kind of flow between the body and the environment, in the way that there is a sort of scientific, you know, movement of air and water and toxins and particles, but also a kind of, yeah, experience of being in nature where some of those boundaries feel a little bit less solid.
Let's talk more about that. I love that idea in general, as well as specifics. The element of soil, right, is something that runs through these works. How does soil relate to what you're just saying? Because that's an element in there, right? This is one that's has a certain potency for you in your thinking visually. Is that correct?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of kind of interesting and sometimes quite contested kind of science going on at the moment about soil. And I find it such an interesting place as a sort of artistic space for imagination, because it feels like this huge frontier that we don't really even think about of, you know, we've gone and seen in the deep ocean and into space, but actually we're still very bad at seeing into the soil, and unless we kind of excavate it. But as soon as you do, that changes its color and compositions. And, you know, by excavating and revealing, you might see what's underneath there, but we don't have a good way of imagining or seeing under the soil. And I'm so interested in how I can use that as a way to sort of engage with that feeling and interest of the past in the way, I guess, it's like actually physically layered into the soil. And also just this idea of sediment and memory and, you know, sort of anything could be happening under there. And also links to sort of ideas and historical cultural ideas of underworlds and those kind of imagined spaces under the ground and the literal. I find that such an exciting kind of clash.
Yeah, the underworld does sound so exciting for some reason, you know, right? It's mm-hmm. where we come from, I guess, but it also sounds like a kind of avant-garde space of some kind, you know. It's what we don't see somehow. So in terms of underground worlds, what kind of myths come to mind for you? That seems like it's in so many different kind of storytelling myths, right? The idea of what's underneath us or what we come from, kind of thing.
Yeah, I think as well that was kind of the basis, and especially of the titling of the show. So psychopomp refers to, in my imagining, it's a dog, but it can be any kind of animal guide into the underworld. And it's this kind of neutral figure that guides and journeys. I think in terms of specific stories, there was a lot of like folklore telling around kind of entrances to the underworld and guards to the underworld. And where I grew up as well, there's a lot of caves. And so there were lots of kind of actual entrances to the underworld. And it can be this space, you know, it's kind of, there's an element of sort of darkness and threat and death. But I'm not thinking of it in a Christian way at all, of like a hell, but more this, I don't know.
So let's talk more about that. Yeah, I like that kind of threshold in between too, right? It's another world. Mm. You just mentioned psychopomp, mm-hmm. the dog-like creature, and one of the works in the show. Can you tell me a little bit about psychopomp's role again? You briefly went over it there, but that's kind of a key to understanding this threshold of it, isn't it?
Yeah, so the psychopomp is a sort of creature that its job is to escort. I mean, in a lot, so it's kind of across multiple myths, so it takes many different bodies and forms, but it's a creature that kind of guides the souls into the underworld. And I loved this idea of this, I guess, animal that crossed these kind of boundaries between the world and the underworld and took us into this sort of underground space.
So without them, we can't get there. They are sort of the as you said, guides, right?
That it's a space that requires some sort of access to entrance. And I guess a lot of the underworld stories have that, like a lot of them, you know, this sense of not being able to return, but also they're quite hard to, you know, to enter them. You have to pass through a state, and often that's death. But I like this idea of kind of sneaking in as the artist and being guided.
Mm-hmm. I like that too. There's another painting called Voices Caught in the Earth. This is quite different than the rest of the show in some ways, that it's such a kind of close-up of a face, and seems to have a very specific message, right? Some of what you were talking before about the soil, but we're talking about multiple voices here. Is that correct?
Yeah, that was a really interesting painting to make. It was the last one I made, and the space of the show was also very particular, and I made a lot of the works thinking about the kind of architecture of the gallery. So it was a normal gallery space, and then it had this sort of stud wall at the back with this sort of secret space behind, and it was almost a little kind of wider than a corridor, so there was these kind of two doors that you could enter via, and they were just openings in the space. They weren't doors. And then that painting hung on the very back of the wall. So it was like you'd see the whole show, and then you would actually go through this threshold, and then that head is at the back. And I make it was the only one in that show, but I do often do these close-ups of heads. And all the previous ones to that one have been kind of in the image of the Green Man and this, like, Gawain and the Green Knight mythology of green forest figures that are humanoid but also non-human. They occupy both spaces. And with this sense of, like, I can go into this threshold, and the show is called Psychopomp, and I can actually go under the ground. That was the only painting in the show that was fully submerged. And it's an interesting painting. It kind of, a lot of my paintings also, there's an element of they arrive, and it's not always a kind of like intellectualized process to what it's going to be. And that one was one that really just arrived.
So I'd love to hear more about that. These, you know, they arrived. It's also a sense of what is the word, channeling, right? I mean, or is that not the word? Is that too sort of imperialist or something, right? Yeah. But you're pulling something in, right? There's voices and or messages or different ways of being that are colliding into, would you say, like a message or something like that, or is that too literal?
Yeah, I think it's not a message, but the sense of these, the place where the underworld and the history of the underground, and I guess of burial and bodies underground and roots, networks, and actually, because this is audio, the painting is a face, but it's kind of made up of a connection of roots and tangle. So you see a face, but what is painted is roots. And a sense of just, I guess it's what I'm slightly is like, slightly like anthropomorphizing the ground, and making it have this human face. But there's no message, but just a sense of this otherness and being confronted by it. And I think often when I'm thinking about myth, I don't want to tell a story that helps us rationalize the world. I want to kind of feel like I'm entering a realm where things are actually quite unknown and strange and maybe beyond our experience of, like, they're not maybe our myths or our culture.
Right, yeah. And it's also futurist, isn't it? It's what, like, post-humanism and that kind of thinking seems like it runs through this as well, which, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the little I know about it, it's what we might be, right? It's a state of evolution. It's something, it's a future projection. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting kind of little bit of, like, tension in my work, in that I'm very frequently looking to the past, and aesthetically I use a lot of kind of art historical languages. Posthumanism is often seen in this kind of technological lens, but I think in the way that I'm looking at it, as understanding ourselves as more porous to the natural world and kind of very interconnected, that's, I guess, a newer lens to which we understand how we are in the world, but also maybe not, in the way that if we think about kind of previous culture and religion, it was probably quite post-human in the way it kind of figured our place in the environment. So there's that slight kind of play of looking at the past and the future. And I don't really ever kind of picture items of modernity in the work, and there isn't contemporary, there are no phones or crisp packets or anything, which is something I kind of enjoy and feel tension within myself about. I don't want to make romantic historical works, but I am just still trying to figure out how to understand the work that keeps coming out.
So when you look at the Lily Pickers, another really large work that I love, what does this say to you? Is this speaking to you in a specific way? I mean, there seems to be a lot of narratives in here, right? There's four figures in here. There's a dialogue between the figures, between the viewer. It feels like multiple stories happening here. Or maybe it's just it's more simple than that, but those ghosts in the background create a...
I think of it as multiple stories, and the two of the figures are kind of much more luminous than the other two. And I think for that one, it was one of those paintings that really the construction of it just arrived as this image, and then I had to kind of work backwards and think, where has this come from? I look a lot at art historical paintings and I read a lot, but it's interesting when a painting arrives so fully formed in its composition. And I think for this one, there is a sense, and it hung right in the center of the show, a sense of one of the figures in particular is really looking out at the viewer, and a sense of coming upon something and being seen by the figures in that kind of story, and maybe feeling a little bit outside of its language of symbols. And there are lots of kind of elements in it. There's this, the main one is this kind of white lily, and then the figures in the back have sort of seemed to have taken one of the flowers. And I liked this feeling that you could read it in many ways, and there's no kind of moralizing or clear narrative in that one. And there might be, but it's not one that we can perhaps completely make sense of.
But it is between worlds, right? I mean, that's what strikes me. It is about, as others are in here, that kind of liminal space, right, between two worlds.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe even three, I would say. It's the viewer on the outside, but also I've painted these very luminous faces on some of the figures. And they're quite mask-like. And for when I paint those faces, I always imagine them as the sort of the face peeking out from another world. So it's pushing through out into ours. And then the bodies behind are kind of undescribed, as if they're behind a veil. And then the ghosts even further back. And it's this sense of time in the work, and also, these different kind of stages of, I don't know, narrative and possibility that's getting further away from us.
Thank you so much for talking to you about this. I love hearing, kind of moving into these kind of themes that we're discussing, and of your beautiful work. So I just want to ask you one more question, but I also just want to note that there's links in here so listeners can look at many more images of the show and dive in there. And I just wanted to ask you, Santa, before we go, what are you reading at the moment?
Thank you so much. That was really lovely. I'm reading two things at the moment. I'm reading Flights by Olga Tokarczuk, which actually I'm reading very slowly. And it's a novel written in kind of little pieces and little snapshots. And at the moment, I'm in this big section about kind of all these different stories around anatomy and dissection. And it's very fascinating. And it's translated.
Is she the one that did Drive Your Plow Over the Bones or something?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and it's very fragmentary, and I'm at kind of at the point where it's all starting to kind of come together and making all these wonderful webs of connections. And the other book I'm reading, which I'm sort of eternally reading, is called Bodies of Water, and it's an academic book, and it's a post-human feminist phenomenology by this really brilliant writer called Astrida Naimans. I've actually never said her name out loud. Naimanis, maybe. And I am, you know, I studied a tiny bit of philosophy, but it is quite outside of my, like, usual language. So I'm reading it very slowly, but I feel like the way she talks about post-humanism and kind of eco-feminism and the way she complicates things and brings in philosophy has been really wonderful at, like, starting to put language to what it is that I'm really interested in doing with painting.
Thanks so much for sharing that with me. It's really been a pleasure talking to you again. There's links here for listeners to get more information. I want to thank you so much for talking with me today, putting together this beautiful show. And again, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.